Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code WBZMass and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.
B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome into Zolak and Bertrand on this Wednesday. We're going to send it right down to Foxborough. Bill Belichick just began his pre-draft press conference. Of course, it may not just be draft questions. Could be questions about Tom Brady,
right,
or Greg Schiano's departure. There are definitely some things to hear from Bill Belichick on, so let's send it to the podium live at Foxborough.
Process, and it's a very lengthy and tedious one that Monty and his staff done a great job on. So, those guys certainly deserve a lot of the credit for the success that we've had, the players that we've been able to acquire. It's been an enormous mountain of work that they've produced, really on a daily basis, but it adds up over weeks, months, and years at a time. So being able to coordinate everything in there, which Nancy and Brian Smith do a tremendous job of, just the volume that we have to deal with and their ability to put it in places where you can actually work through it in a meaningful way is an important part of the process as well. So that being said, this is a pre-draft press conference. I'll entertain anything relative to the 2019 draft. Just say as a prelude to that, obviously many of our 2018 draft choices had partial seasons or minimal in some cases. So we're excited to see how those guys will do this year. Obviously, it's a hardworking group. Those guys are here on a very consistent basis, and hopefully we'll be able to get a much longer look at the 2018 draft class than we were able to get last year. But moving ahead to 2019, we have a lot of draft picks. As we sit here today, I don't know that necessarily means that they will or won't be there on draft weekend. We'll see how all that goes. Just evaluate situations as they come up and try to make the best decisions we can for the football team. There's no set goal in mind as to how many picks to have or what to do with them. Just want to try to make good decisions at every opportunity we can to improve our team in whatever way is possible, and that includes everything. So it's all part of the team-building process, and we'll see all that plays out. But from a draft standpoint, we're in the middle of our 30 draft visits this week, so we'll finish that up this week and into next week, and then kind of finish up our final preparations with pulling it all together between the film evaluations, character evaluations, medical evaluations, and trying to really get as good of a predictor as possible as to how the player will fit in and perform on our team, in our system, in New England. Regardless of what the league value is for the players, really what the player can do for us is the final what the final evaluation goal is that we're trying to achieve. So that's kind of what we're working on now.
Bill, how important is it to know what some of the needs and desires of the teams immediately around you? I'm not talking about 10 teams, but
20
down to you.
We track that, and we track it the best we can. I think there's a lot of misinformation that's out there now. There's sometimes other accurate information that you can obtain for one or through one source or another. So I think sometimes it's relevant. You know, a lot of times it's not the team right in front of you. It's a team somewhere else, a team that could be, depending on what round you're in, at a location behind you that, you know, maybe looking at a certain position or a certain player that could affect your draft strategy as well. So, you know, the team in front of you might not have any need for a, or even, you know, they wouldn't even want a type of player, maybe a players that you're considering. But that doesn't really mean anything because anybody could move up into that spot and take that player. So, it's all relevant. It's, you know, I know you're right. In the first round, I mean, we're not going from 30 to 8, so that's 32 to 8, whatever it is. Like, that's not realistic, but there could be a team at, whatever, 40. That's really more of a problem for us than the team at 31. So each round's different. Each situation's different. We try to, you know, usually have a decent amount of time between our picks to identify, okay, here are the players that we're considering. Here are the teams that are around us. If one of those teams is, you know, actively trying to trade out, then that means somebody's going to trade in. And who could they come out for? How would that affect us? What do we want to get ahead of that team? Do we care? You know, so forth.
The only reason I mentioned it, just to give an anecdote or a case study, is the Gronkowski move back in 2010. You moved out two spots, got ahead of Baltimore, who was perhaps looking to replace Todd Heath. And just that was an instance maybe where there was only one spot in between you guys. Is that kind of where you have to be conscious of?
Yeah, again, there's a lot of those. Matt Light, you know, was another example of that. Eugene Wilson. Yeah, look, there's multiple examples of it. And moving back is obviously just the reverse of that. You feel like you could take the same player at a lower point in the draft and acquire another asset somewhere. You know, there's merit to doing that. You don't want to lose the player that you want, but maybe that's a player that, or maybe there are multiple players there, and there's not in that particular circumstance that big of a differential. So if you can, you know, gain an asset, gain value by doing that, then there's a strategy that's makes that, you know, consideration.
How much has the Jimmy Johnson and that trade chart, how much has that changed over the years? And do you find that everybody's working off that same model, if you will?
I would say that in general, the trades over the last several years, for the most part, have been, let's call them pretty, within 5 to 10%, pretty equitable trades. So for you to have a chart that's different than the other 31 charts isn't really that productive, because now we're just arguing about what chart, you know, my chart says this, your chart says that, so... I'd say officially or unofficially, well, it's unofficially, but I would say everybody probably uses about the same value chart. I'd say in our draft trade negotiations through the years, especially the last 2-3 years, there hasn't been a lot of my chart says this, your chart says that. Now, 10, 15 years ago, there was some of that, you know. Well, here's what we think it should be. Well, you know, the other team's in a different ballpark because they're looking at a different chart. I would say that when you look at the trades now, over the past few years, the majority of them fall within what we would say is a range of a fair trade. So what the going rate would be is what the team gave up, and what the team got is about what you would expect them to get, whether it's our trade or not, just looking league-wide. So, you know, the first round's a little bit different because, you know, you're trading for a very specific player at that point. Not that you're not trading for a player in the second and third round. I'm not saying that. When the team moves up, they move up to take a certain player that they want. But not everybody's necessarily after that player. Whereas in the first, you know, 5-10 picks, whatever it is, when you're trading there, you know, you're trading for a certain guy, and when they trade out of it, they know that they're trading away from that player. You know, might be one or two players, but it's a, you know, much, much more defined situation.
Bill, when a veteran's involved in these trades, do you think of the veteran in terms of pick value, or how does that
value? Yeah, again, we, right, sure. So, you know, we have the different values that we place on future picks, current picks, the round values. And again, you know, being the first pick in the round and the last pick in the round is not quite the same value. And so that can come into play on future picks, veteran players, depending on their age, contract situation, and, you know, level of play. Again, we would find, you know, we have comparable comparables that we would look at on that. So, you know, a starter, a rotational player, a backup, a player that has a certain amount of play time, or a player that has a certain amount of production, that there are comparables of those trades, whether it be player for player trades or player for pick trades. And so that's, and again, certainly there are trades that fall outside of whatever the norm is, but, you know, we have norms that we look at, and that's a norm, and you can do better than that. You probably feel like that's, you know, maybe about as good as you can do, assuming there isn't an unusual situation where there's a high demand for the player, and if it's below that, then you decide whether or not you want to accept a maybe a little less than market value for the trade, but you still feel like the trade benefits your team, so you decide to do it. So, but yeah, we certainly the player for player or player for pick trades are different than the pick for pick trades, but we try to evaluate those as well. And a lot of it, again, is based on play time, production, and age and salary, because, you know, salary is definitely a factor in what the trade value of a player is.
Bill, you mentioned the scouts have put in a lot of work for this draft. The coaches are part of the scouting process, too. They do a lot of interviews. They get in on players at their position. You guys have had a lot of transition on the coaching staff this year. Have you noticed much effect on how you guys are scouting and setting your board, and how the new coaches are, you know, settling in with their new roles?
Probably a little less than normal. Doing it, but still less activity with the coaching staff, mm-hmm. for the reasons you just articulated.
Does losing your defensive coordinator at this point in the process, does that change much as, you know, how you scout or going to be drafting on that side of the ball?
Well, I mean, we're not talking about an unprecedented event here, so yeah, we've dealt with changes before, and we'll continue to deal with them.
And I guess I just got to ask, any plans on how you're going to replace the defensive coordinator moving forward?
You mean relative to the 2019 draft?
Draft and the season that comes after.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just kind of stick to the draft for right now, Ben. But I appreciate the question. Yeah. I really appreciate you asking that.
When you use the word comparables or comparables, when you have players at positions that make an indelible mark among the most complete, best players at their positions in their careers, and you have to draft players at those positions, what's it'd be unrealistic, I imagine, that we'll try to find the next guy who transcends and is an all-time great. So how do you deal with that situation? You know, for example, Rod announced his retirement. So if you're looking at tight ends in the draft, how do you evaluate them fairly and totally?
Yeah, well, I think for us, we have always looked to the future. So each player is different. Each situation is different. Whatever a player was or wasn't in the past is in the past. And our decisions are for the future. So what player can we add to our roster in whatever way we add them is the best decision at that point in time for our football team? And that's what we look at. Not, you know, Mike Vrabel and Ted Washington and, you know, Deion Branch, Randy, whoever. I mean, it's Vince Wilfork and his Teddy Bruce can write it down the line. There's a million of these guys. McGinnis, I mean, just keep talking about him. Troy Brown. Kevin Falk, but it's, you know, none of them are in this draft class, so we'll look at this draft class or whatever other players are available and make the decisions that we feel like will benefit our football team in 2019 and beyond.
The game has evolved, but I mean, this is nothing new. Players come in different shapes and sizes every year, but as positions have changed, the game's evolved. Do you have to change or alter the way that you evaluate a player at a specific position?
Well, I think you have to have some awareness of that. Yeah. Again, each situation is a little bit different. I mean, it's, you know, could be certainly a much longer conversation. I'd say that, look, we have our standards at each position. So height, weight, speed, and other criteria are a standard. So some players are below that standard and are good football players. Some players are below that standard and aren't good players. Some players are above that standard and are good, and some players are above it and they're not as good. You know, so that's not the final evaluation, but it is a standard. And so as those standards have changed, I mean, you know, when I came in the league, when I was at the Giants, a standard for, you know, defensive tackle was like 6'2", 285 pounds. I mean, offensive lineman, you know, 6'5", 285, 290. I mean, those guys now would look like, you know, the midgets. So it's changed, and our standards have changed. But again, relatively speaking, you're still evaluating, you know, what the player's total performance is going to be, not just the standards. But I mean, to your point, if 2/3 of the league have running type quarterbacks and quarterbacks that are athletic and are going to scramble and are going to be those kind of players, then you better be ready to defend them. And if teams are going to be three receiver sets in the majority of offensive formations, then you better be ready to put five defensive backs on the field and be ready to have a slot corner. And if you want to have a slot receiver, then, you know, you need to have a slot receiver. If you want to put three out there, somebody's got to play in the middle. So there certainly is a degree of that. And I think that's, you know, those are things you have to, you know, be mindful of. And I'd say usually they kind of, you know, hit you in the face. Usually you sit there at the end of the year and say, well, you know, we had a lot of trouble blocking this player or defending this type of player or whatever it is. And then you know, it kind of becomes a need for you that, well, we have to find, either we have to change our scheme to do this, which probably isn't that easy, or you would have already done it, or we have to, you know, have another certain type of player on our roster that we don't currently have that has a certain type of skill set. So, you know, this is another year where there's a lot of big receivers, 6'4", 225, 230, whatever they are. I mean, you know, somebody's have to cover those guys one of these days. You know, I don't know if it's all going to be this year or not, but, and there's plenty of them in the league right now that fall into that category. So, you know, it seems like there's a little bit more of a, you know, emphasis towards, you know, the smaller, quicker slot receivers. So better find somebody to cover those guys too, if, you know, and vice versa.
So with quick receivers in the draft, how difficult is it to project how a player in college will fit into your offense when you're looking at height, weight, speed, and obviously him playing with a different quarterback in a different system, and how has that process evolved over the years for you?
Yeah, well, it's the same battle at every position. I mean, you're looking down the same road, really. You know, I'd say the issue in college football is there's not the same passing game in college football as there's in the NFL, period. So it's hard to evaluate the receivers. It's hard to evaluate the quarterback. It's hard to evaluate the offensive linemen. It's harder to evaluate the pass rushers. And it's harder to evaluate the coverage players. So, but, you know, we're all looked at the same film, so. You know, all the teams in the league are, you know, we all see the same games. But the college passing game is very different from the professional passing game. So, you know, when you're looking at it, you're looking at a lot of it's really projecting all those positions a little bit differently. You know, to a certain degree, it's different in the running game too. But probably less difference in the running game than in the passing game, in my opinion. So,
part of the reason you guys maybe have had more success importing veteran guys for that position than drafting them and projecting them and having them work up in the system? Because you've seen
Well, I think it's always easier to evaluate NFL players than it is to evaluate college players. I mean, that's, you know, look, if we get a guy from another team, we're going to watch him play against many of the same teams we play. We just haven't seen him play in our system, but we've certainly seen him match up against, you know, other players in our division or other players in our conference or, you know, comparable players. So in comparable schemes, which is critical too. Again, a lot of cases in college, you're projecting a guy from whatever his college scheme is into a totally different scheme. And, you know, that's imperfect. So, but again, look, we all have the same opportunity here. So it's the same players. We're all watching the same games, and we all have to make independent decisions from team to team as to, you know, how that player will fit into whatever team it is that's, you know, trying to make that fit. So, but it's to your point, it's much harder in from college to the NFL than from the NFL to the NFL.
Thanks, everyone. All right, that's Bill Belichick, and he did not get asked about Greg Schiano. Right?
Well, no, kind of.
Fall and ask him.
Kind of.
It wasn't a direct thing, but you've lost your coordinator. Well, it's not like it's unprecedented. When's the last time like you had a coordinator bell that way?
But no one said to him, what happened with Greg Schiano? No one said that to him.
No.
Right?
No, I think he kind of set the tone with the this is 2019 draft scouting press conference here.
No one asked him about Brady's contract situation.
Correct.
I thought we might get one of those answers today that we got a few years back in this, you know, type of setting, the draft.
Yeah.
Right?
Sosie kind of asked about replacing Gronkowski.
Nobody asked about replacing Brady. Nobody asked about the future quarterback.
Nobody.
This is a pre-draft press conference. And take away all the other questions. They had the open lane to ask that question, and nobody asked it.
Bill, are you interested in drafting a quarterback this year? Like that? I thought we might get that.
A reporter should have said, Bill, given Tom's age and contract status.
His quote. That's Bill Belichick's quote.
Because he's in a contract year. Would you consider drafting a quarterback in this draft or something like that?
When he drafted Jimmy Garoppolo, he said, well, given our quarterback's age and contract situation. That is what he said.
He knew it all.
Well, the age is now, what, 4 years older? Five? Is that how long?
5 years older.
5 years. That was 5 years ago. He was concerned about his quarterback's age and contract. Now he's got a quarterback in his 40s with a year to go on his contract.
Well, it's Tom versus time now. Like, Tom won that. It's like it's almost like Bill's conceding it. Like, he won that. He won.
So we didn't get that today. We didn't get much on Schiano. I know that there was a chance that he gets asked about, you know, the Kraft situation.
He was waiting for it. You could tell he was waiting for it.
I was less concerned with that. I was more interested in the football stuff, Schiano and Brady. But we didn't really get much of that. We got a lot of draft stuff. You draft guys must love that press conference.
Tell you what, that Thorson.
And I know there's a lot of you out there.
Like that.
Just salivating over, draft picks.
We got to take a peek at this Northwestern quarterback, boys.
All right.
Jim was on it.
We've got plenty to get to today, including what happened at Fenway yesterday on opening day. And also one Patriots move. That is the re-signing of Steven Gostkowski. So we got a lot to get to. But we do need to take a timeout. That press conference running a little bit long this morning. So don't go anywhere. We're off and running here on Zolak.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Patriots kicker, Steven Gostkowski. Do you want to be doing this when you're 46?
Honestly, no.
No, but for now, he does want to do it for two more years. Steven Gostkowski, at the age of 35, has signed a two-year contract extension, according to reports over the last 24 hours. We told you yesterday of a report that Steven Gostkowski was getting some interest from the 49ers.
You know, it's interesting, too, you know, being out there as long as he has since free agency started. And the inkling I got from talking to some people was he was coming back on a two-year deal. I said that weeks ago, the beginning of free agency, that That was a big kick at the end. I think he misses that kick in the Super Bowl. I think maybe he leaves.
It sounds like that 49ers report was not BS.
No. Sounds like maybe that put a little pressure on New England to step up and say, we can't lose this guy, too. Can't lose this guy, too. And I'm glad he's back. I think it's good. If you're signing all these special teams guys to sort of be your core units and bring guys like Brandon Bolden back, how are you going to lose your kicker? I mean, he signed a punter. He could have been Super Bowl MVP. That's how good Ryan Allen was in that game. Just keep it rolling. Keep that whole systematic snap, hold, kick up. That's stuff you don't have to worry about. It's like you don't have to worry about the quarterback. You don't have to worry about – I know you worry about missing kicks. I understand that. Yeah. But mm-hmm. I guess it's good he's back. So I just think maybe the San Francisco thing, maybe it was more serious than people wanted to believe or thought was even possible. You know, maybe that's a good job by his agent saying, hey, he's going out there, guys, unless you want to talk and get this thing done.
Yeah, I think the interest was real from the 49ers, and he was probably willing to talk to them.
Meaning,
would you not take the call?
Right. Maybe it's like,
I'll talk to you. You want to talk? Let's talk.
You know what? He's going to go out for a visit. They want to bring him out. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to tell him to go on a visit or not? We want to get this deal done. And that's probably a good job by the agent.
So Robbie Gould's cap number is $4.971 million. That's what the franchise tag number was for Robbie Gould, and that seems to be an issue with the 49ers. That will have him, if he accepts it and he does play on that tag, he will be the highest paid kicker in the league at $4.971 million per year. Steven Goskowski's deal, he reported 2 years, $8.5 million. All right. I don't know what the guarantees are. I don't know what the structure of it is, but let's just take it on the face value.
Good deal.
$4.25 a year, right? That would put him as tied with Graham Gano for the second highest paid kicker in the league. So he is still being paid at the top of the league.
It's still coming after he executed a fully 4-year, $16 million deal. You know, I mean, he saw that thing to the end, and it's almost like he just kept it rolling for another 2 years.
So I would say, if you're asking me who won the deal, the player won the deal. Steven Goskowski got a really good contract here. I don't think it's a team-friendly deal. I think he got paid top of the league when he may not necessarily be top of the league statistically anymore.
Mm.
So he did well. Good for him.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's back. Glad they have him.
You know, usually when you're out
there. I really wasn't looking forward to a change, but I feel that if the Patriots and specifically Bill Belichick had to find another guy, he's been pretty good at finding guys.
Yeah.
So I would have had faith that they'd find someone who didn't stink. But I think it's just easier to keep rolling with Steven Goskowski.
I do too. And I think it's a tough position because – you know, kicker's kind of quirky. You know, if you sit out there long enough, eventually they kind of forget about you. Not the team you're potentially departing or wanting to sign back with, but other teams. Okay, that guy's out there. He gets paid too much. We're going to pass on. You know, like other teams saying, you know, we got bigger needs than bringing in a $4 million kicker. There are teams that look at it that way and say, you know what, we're only going to invest $1.5 million in a kicker. And then you end up paying for it, you know, in November and December when weather's bad or you miss a clutch kick. You know, lower half bottom feeder type teams really don't want to bring that type of salary on. I think it's good that New England has him. They did. It is. I think it eases your mind going into it. They got to figure out this kickoff thing. They got to start working on that and figure out ways to, you know, eliminate teams from the big returns and, you know, how can we combat this not having a running start more? And I think Gostkowski helps out with the height of the kick.
Do you know what the cautionary tale is against going for a little bit of a cheaper option at kicker or maybe thinking you have a chance to get something better is what happened in Chicago. I mean, I think that's a clear-cut example. They cut Robbie Gould there a year ago.
Yeah.
He is the same age as Goskowski, I believe. I'll double-check that, but they're right around the same age.
Yeah, but the new guy was making bank, too. It's not like they saved a ton of money. Like, yeah, I think that was, what, a two-year, $9 million type deal.
Robbie Gould is actually 36. He's a year older than Steven Goskowski.
Robbie Gould's been around a long time.
So, Steven Goskowski, they're a year apart.
Yeah,
so,
but we know that. I mean,
okay,
we know that.
So like, this actually lines up perfectly because it was last offseason that he got cut, or was it 2 years ago now?
No, he played 2 years with the Niners.
Right, it's two full years, and now he got tagged.
I think it was 2 years, $6 million. He signed it the first day of free agency.
But he got cut by the Bears. When he left Chicago, they cut him, and he was only due – I think he was due like $3+ million, like somewhere in that range of higher end paid kickers. But they moved on from Robbie Gould because, you know, he's in this situation where, you know, we could get younger, we could get cheaper, all that. And look at where that landed them.
Yeah.
Do you think they wish they had Robbie Gould in the playoffs this year?
Yeah, they probably do.
Yep.
Probably wish they had.
But Belichick even had hesitation with him in the Super Bowl. Remember the mic'd up stuff with Brady? He's like, why don't we just kick a field goal? Game's over. Belichick obviously didn't have 100% confidence in that, right?
I went over with them in the Belichick. You'll see that in the DVDs. I'm like, he said the tough thing was it was fourth and inches. You know, I was like, we should be able to pick that up. But then, yeah, let's kick.
Let me just kick the field goal.
You good on the field goal?
Yeah. We're getting the field goal.
40-yarder, game's over.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Field goal, Steve. Field goal.
See, he didn't hesitate there, but he's looking at Joe Johnson. Okay, so, we good?
We good on length. So,
he was not thinking field goal there.
The question is, though, is he thinking field goal?
No.
Is he not thinking field goal because of the kicker or because of the situation?
No, I think the
situation. We don't know that answer.
And he told me that during the we looked at the Gostkowski kick. He said, this is a money kick. Now, at the time, that's a tough decision because fourth and inches. Bill's thinking.
He got too far into the game too for himself. He got too far into it for himself because that happens to everybody.
He didn't even know yard. I don't think he was really aware of, okay, oh, what is this going to be? A 42? Is this 47? He's looking at that like, it's that much, and I'm holding my forefinger and my thumb together. It's like 2 inches. Do we sneak it with a guy that could sneak the hell out of it, or do we continue to run it the way Sony's been running it or Burkhead? Because they're running it that drive, too. Like, Jesus, we should be able to pick this up. We're
it's like he forgot field goal was an option, and then Brady's
right.
Like, just kick the field goal. Oh, yeah, that's right. Let's do it. Right.
Because I will say, as soon as Brady said field goal, he's like, ah. We good on the field goal? Yeah, all right. Yeah, let's kick the field goal. Almost like it was too quick to convince him to do it.
That'll happen like when we're planning our show. I'll be so deep into something, and you'll just be like, why don't we just do this? I'll be like, oh, yeah, you're right. What are we doing? Yeah, let's just do this.
Just like that.
It's just
magic.
Like that.
We're going to talk magic.
I'm the Brady, and Jim's the Belichick. I totally agree.
He in that mode right there, and I know, but you know, if you know Bill, he's thinking with Josh right there, okay, what running player are we calling? Are we sneaking it? I think he's in go-for-it mode right there.
Chad is in Medford on this deal for Steven Gostkowski. Chad, what do you make of it?
Money. I mean, Bill Belichick's the best coach in history. He can't get better special team players either. He's paying all this money for special teams. He can't draft a few guys and coach them up. And one other thing I wanted to bring
up. But Chad, of all the special teamers, I'm going to drop you there because that's a point that we're going to expand upon. We're talking about special teamers. We're talking about Gostkowski. Save the other point for another day. If you're going to overspend on special teamers, I don't mind overspending on the kicker a little bit. This one doesn't bother me. The ones that should bother you are the Brandon Boldens of the world. If you want to gripe about too much spending on special teams, Nate Ebner, who good players, good guys, that they're here.
Slater, I look at Slater above those guys.
I don't look at Slater as an issue.
No. But Slater is, it's locker room, it's community, it's everything. Like that guy, you get him in the locker room, get him in workouts. He ain't going to miss one, and he's going to get guys around him. He's going to lead them. And
if you overpay on special teams and you're overpaying for some sort of electric returner on punts or something,
that's,
all right.
That's why you go out and you take a shot at
Cordell. I can sort of see it a little bit. Yeah, I can. Right, exactly.
Yeah, 2.5,
Kickoff return guy in an age where kickoff returns are becoming, you know, next to nil. Yeah, okay, I can sort of see the value in that. Paying a little bit more to make sure you have a good kicker, I'm on board with that. So, no, is it more than maybe what the 49ers would have offered? It might be. He did well. He got a good deal. He should be happy with his deal. He did well. Patriots gave him more than fair market value for Steven Gostkowski. So, I'm glad he's staying. I think that just simplifies things for them. And, no, it doesn't bother me that it's too much money. It doesn't. 617-779-0985, the telephone number. Chris Sale struggled yesterday. He was he was having some difficulties out on the mound, and he was not afraid to admit it after the game. We'll get to his day and the Red Sox, where they stand now at 3-9. We'll do it next.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Sports. Greenfield.
All right. Zolak and Bertrand.
That's a 3-inch difference between those two guys.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Everybody, everybody.
Here comes the run. And it's thrown right by everyone. It's going to be a stolen base of home. How about that?
You
You never see that.
Wow.
I mean, this is like shocking. Yeah, I mean, he just took off probably because of the windup. He had him timed with that windup, and he just went for it. What a gutsy move.
This is very easy to just throw on top of the pile and say we're not playing good. This wasn't us not playing good. This was me sucking today. That's frustrating because today was the day we were going to turn it around. You know, we're back home, ceremony, in front of our home fans, playing our first home game. Everyone did what they had to do except for me, and that's a frustrating spot to be in.
Chris Sale after his start yesterday. By the way, coming up in just a couple of moments, we're giving away a $100 gift card for the Under Armour Brand House at the Pru. We'll do that coming up in 6.5 minutes or so. Nice. Okay, that sound good?
That's great.
That's where you want to be.
Great.
10:55. We'll do it. Wow. I don't know where to start on yesterday for the Red Sox. I don't know whether to start with the game, to start with where their record now sits, or to start with Chris Sale.
Chris Sale.
Sale seems like the logical spot to start because this...
100%.
I'm sorry. This is becoming alarming.
Okay. Because
we already were alarmed, but now we're at a point where you're
sat there looking
at it and it's not getting better. There's not improvement. There was some improvement in the velocity, but there just was not in terms of the swings and misses. There obviously was not improvement in terms of getting guys out. He was giving up hits. It was not a good day for him and not a good day for the team.
We sat there with Dan Shaughnessy when the news started to come out and people talking about Cora saying that, you know, he was kind of sick, you know, dealing with some stuff in between starts here. So that's some of the reason I thought, and Dan said it too, that this actually put more I don't want to say more scrutiny, but put him under a microscope more so yesterday because, okay, now he's normal. Now he's good to go. He's good to go today. Where do you guys see it? And then people were jumping on the early velocity. Velo. Yeah, people were jumping on that. Oh, mid-90s. Those tweets didn't really hold after that. Nor did Chris Sale. And was driving home after it, and you're listening to the game, and you could just hear the cracks off the bat. And it was resonating through the radio. Like, boom, like they were hitting him. And then you got Benny Rodriguez. They stole home on you.
That, to me, is the low point of the day. The Red Sox were booed, and Chris Sale was booed when that happened.
Should be.
When Gurriel stole a home in the top of the fourth inning, which is basically a way to tell a pitcher, bleep you.
This was your elixir.
It's the bat flip, right? When you hit a home run.
Yeah.
When you just flat, I mean, that was a straight steal, knowing that Chris Sale could not find the plate and had lost control and was clearly flustered and could not focus on anything other than trying to get the baseball to the plate and into the catcher's mitt. And so what did the Blue Jays do? They were aggressive, and they stole home, and it was easy. And that was embarrassing for the Chris Sale and the Red Sox, and the crowd booed. Hard to blame them. I said, you know, I don't know that there was much.
You were anti-boo.
I was anti-booing simply because of the pitching. That was embarrassing,
ta-da!
So I was wrong.
Ta-da!
There was appropriate booing at Fenway yesterday.
Say it again. You were wrong.
I was wrong. Wrong. Yes.
I like the booing. That shows there's a pulse there.
That shows that people understand what the hell that was that they just saw. They saw that and said, you've got to be kidding me.
It had to be worse in real time. Like to see it develop real because you see it coming. Everybody in the park could see the guys leading. Oh, God, there he goes.
Was he sick yesterday?
No. No, because they talked about
the
sickness.
Did he have the stomach bug?
No, this was an elixir.
Oh, was there any excuses offered on Chris Sale's behalf? Because Chris Sale, to his credit, has offered no excuses to this point.
Post-game.
Okay? He has not done that. His manager has done that.
I sat there at home and I watched Nesson post-game. I rarely watch the post-games. If you sit there and you watch a four-hour baseball game, you're going to sit there and digest
it? Hours and 40 minutes or so yesterday.
3 hours, 49 minutes. So I sat there just to see what they were going to say about it and see if they're going to be critical. He said it was a really tough matchup for the Red Sox coming home because there's not a lot of players that you really understood what
they are. Well, that's because you're watching a set full of Baghdad Bobs over on Nesson.
Do you listen to me on broadcast when it goes bad? Do you hear me on broadcast when it goes bad? Baghdad Bob, like... And then you go and you look at some of the lineups of these guys. They got 10 guys batting under 200. It's six guys in their lineup under 200.
Beatles guys keep hitting home runs, though.
Oh, my God. They're jacking it.
I got left and right. Mitchie Moreland. I got bets.
Mitchie Moreland, my man. Deep into the bullpen.
Mitchie, four bags.
Mitchie, two bags. I saw Carrabas say yesterday, Mitchie, two bags is dead. Mitchie, four bags killed him.
Carrabas needs to calm down with the all caps text.
Oh, you don't like that?
So celebrating the
velocity, the velo.
Oh, and the Red Sox successes in their 3-9 record so far. It's like
he's having a tough time. I'm not getting away. He's dying inside. There's a part of him dying right now.
He's not getting an ERA of 9, Chris Sale. And it only took 83 fastballs. Credit to David Adler, writer for MLB.com.
Okay.
He had this tweet yesterday. On his 83rd fastball of the season, Chris Sale got his first swing and miss.
Oh, man. See, and I hate when baseball people do this where they take snippets of past years or and there was a stat out there, Chris Sale's last 10 starts and his ERA is up over 6 and how many home runs he gave up. I hate that because last year's last year and this year's this year. And I think you need to look at it, you know, sort of from that respect. I hate the division and take it. I'll take something from here and here and I'll make my point. But if they handle Chris Sale the exact same way at the end of the year and he's having the same type of problems, maybe it's fair to look back to some of those previous 7 starts to where maybe he'd started to develop this problem and this is what he is. That's fair.
I don't think it's fair
to take part of last year, advance it to this year, and say this is what you have because you had an entire offseason to fix it. And maybe the point is...
Wait, I don't get it. Why is it not fair to talk about last season? Last season's very pertinent.
Because
he went on the disabled list twice last year,
and
he's now 30 years old, and at the end of the year, he never returned to full form.
Because they always used to bug me with when you would make points about pitchers where we could say, let's take these starts, and we'll group them together, and this is what this guy is. Because I don't think it's fair to the player. Because every year I think is different, new.
Who's cherry picking with Chris Sale?
Maybe
last year and this year, it is a one.
That's what I'm trying to say.
It's one consecutive timeline.
Maybe it's fair to look at this guy and say he hasn't changed. He's the same guy, and you awarded him that contract. Yesterday was bad. Yesterday was really bad.
I would so badly like for the Red Sox, for Dave Dombrowski, and for the owners to get back on the picnic bench like they were in spring training. And I would like them to answer the question, do you think it gets better from here? Do you think Chris Sale's arm problems, shoulder problems, whatever the problem is, because there is a problem, whether it's injury or not.
Don't call him bitch about weather, by the way, because the other team played in it too.
The issue is, do you think it gets better from here because you just signed him to a 5-year, $145 million deal? Do you think in 2020 this looks better? 2021? 2022? 2023? Do you think it looks better in any of those years than how it looks right now? Do you think it gets better from here once you get into your 30s and you've got arm problems?
Probably not. If you have arm problems, no. That's health. He faced Hernandez, Drury, Grichik, Jansen, Gurriel, Urena, and these guys are all hitting under 200.
Oh, they all suck, by the way.
Under 200.
Lineup stinks.
Well, I'm getting told in postgame it's a bad matchup. Tough matchup for him. This is all you talked about. Get home. We're getting home. We haven't had any home games yet. Remind the fans. There's your home game against a bad team. The Nationals a better record than you. That team. Names you don't even recognize have a better record than you. They came in and hit your guy. In the same weather, by the way. Yeah, they're ready to go. Ready to go. Yeah. And aware. They were aware. Okay, he doesn't have it today. We're going to steal home on his ass.
I do like Galvis, though. Good player. Like him. But anyway, there's real concern about Chris Sale that I want to continue to talk about, but there should also start to be some real concern about where the Red Sox are at. They're 12 games in. I think the early thing is over.
Hangover's over?
Yeah, let's end the it's early thing on the Red Sox. We'll talk more about that coming up. Right now, caller 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. That's the contest line. It's a different number than the normal call-in line, so pay attention. 617-931-0985. You'll score a $100 gift card for the Under Armour Brand House at the Pru. To get your last-minute running or watching gear, get to the Pru, get to the Under Armour Brand House, and spend Marathon Monday with UA and watch the race from their viewing bays near the finish line. That is caller 10 right now. You're a winner. We'll get to headlines at the top of the hour with Hardy, and we're talking more Red Sox with you on the phone lines.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using the promo code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.